Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Investing with IBD Podcast. It's Justin Nielsen, your host, and it is Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. We've got the last day of what an interesting month to start 2024. And joining me as he normally does, we missed you last week. It's Arusha Paris from O'Neill Global Advisors. He's a portfolio manager over there. How you doing, Arusha?
I'm doing well, Justin. Yeah, it's been an interesting end of the last day of the month right here. So
yeah. And just so you know, we're taping a little bit early today, because to accommodate our guest, who of course is one of our favorites to have, especially at the end of January, to kind of give his outlook. It's Jeffrey Hirsch coming back to the show. He of course is the editor of the Stock Traders Almanac. So if you like data, this is the man for you. He's got years and years of data, started by his father, Yale Hirsch. The Stock Traders Almanac just looks at things every which way and is a great resource for traders, I think, that has been used for decades, and always interested in hearing Jeffrey's outlook on the market and kind of what we can learn from history. So great to have you on the show again.
Great to be with you guys, and thanks for the accommodation. And hopefully I'll give you some opinion and analysis instead of not just data today.
Okay, very good. So of course, one of the things that we're going to be chatting a lot about is, again, we're going to kind of go a little bit out of order today. We're going to start a little bit with the historical context. Sure. Of, seasonality, presidential cycles, and, things that we can learn from that. And then we'll really kind of dive into how that is playing out right now with mm-hmm. our current situation, and then also take a look at maybe some stocks that are on Jeffrey's radar right now. So just kind of starting out, give us an overview for people that are maybe new to the Stock Traders Almanac and, what your father started. Mm-hmm. What was kind of the initial purpose that you came up with this idea for?
Well, I mean, Yale had an epiphany back in the 60s. He had been working at Indicator Digest with his cousin, my godfather, Sam Coslow, who started Indicator Digest. And after being there for several years, about 61 to 65, he had this epiphany to take all these cycles, indicators, patterns, and seasonalities and put them in calendar order so that he could follow the market schedule along with his own. Apparently, it worked for a lot of people. We've been doing it for 57 years. I'm 57. He started, just before I was born. First edition came out in 68. The 2024 has been out for a few months now. It's the 57th. And it's just a testament to the research, the iconic thinking. I mean, we continue to update and tweak, but the same things continue to persist. This January seasonal period. I mean, today's a very important day for us at the Almanac. This is the January barometer, something that Yale invented back in 1972. Same year he invented the Santa Claus rally, which people, have issues with. We discussed that. Everyone can go to stocktradersalmanac.com and get all the background on that. So I don't have to run on that. But we did have a negative Santa Claus rally, negative first 5 days. That's the two first parts of our January indicator trifecta. But unless something happens between now, when we're recording this, and the close, we're going to have a positive January. And that in and of itself, right. I'm not sure we need that. Unless,
I'll take it. I'm going to do whatever I can.
For those listening, Arusha's crossing his fingers. I think he may have, said a Hail Mary or two. I'm not sure what was happening in the background.
But that's huge, though, Jeff.
I'll call my rabbi when we get off.
We'll take it all. But that's really important, because that could mean the difference, using the previous data that the Almanac has provided. That can mean the difference between having a pretty good year or yeah. maybe a tougher year.
I mean, the critics, the skeptics, like to point out that the January barometer, basically the 75%, you know, accuracy ratio, the market's up pretty much 75% of the time, 70% of the time, whatever. But the point is when it's when January's positive, the full year is positive 86.5% of the time. When it's down, it's only up 44% of the time. So down Januaries are an issue. And, you know, it's not necessarily a standalone indicator. It's not a standalone indicator. I never claimed it to be. You use it in conjunction with your other data, your other indicators, and you take it, you know, to confirm or reassess your outlook on the market. And it's a time to check. I mean, our base case scenario for about 8 to 15%, depending upon Dow or S&P, NASDAQ, is still in play for election year 2024. And you want to talk about the other history. Is this is an election with a sitting president running for re-election. Mm-hmm. I've told you before that percentage is 12.8% when there's a sitting president running versus -1.5% for S&P when it's an open field. So mm-hmm. everyone that's hoping that, you know, we have a different race or a different, you know, election battle, you know, maybe they're short the market or something right now. I don't know, but it would probably create some uncertainty and go down there. So we had the selling in the beginning of January. Yep. January has become a little bit of a profit-taking period. We were up quite exponentially or parabolically at the end of the year, right on cue with the pre-election year seasonal pattern, making the high at year-end or almost year-end within a couple of days. But now, you know, I've got a chart. I think Arush has probably seen it where, and I can send you the updated one to lay in there, where 2024 is back up into the sitting president election year seasonal pattern, tracking that. And then, you know, first 5 months are important, does better when the sitting president incumbent party wins, and you can reverse handicap that, you know, so that if the market doesn't do well in the first 5 months, it means the incumbent might get ousted, which means the market won't be as strong, except the last 7 months of election years, only two down periods since 1950. You could guess them: 2000 with the undecided election and 08 with the great financial crisis.
Yeah, and so Jeff, I've shared the S&P 500 election year seasonal pattern. It should show up here in a second. And before we get a little bit further into the current year, Jeff, I just want to take a moment and go back to last year when you were on, when we went over the trifecta, yeah. When everyone was 100% convinced that we were going to have a recession, and yeah, I was concerned to everything, and the almanac, the seasonality, everything worked perfectly. A little bit about that, because it was well done. The calls, you absolutely nailed the calls in on your Thank webinars you. And through your blog. So I want to make sure everyone hears that and how important that how well it worked last year.
I mean, we hit the trifecta last year. All three were positive, which was the opposite of 2022 when we didn't get them all. And we were also in a midterm year. Mm-hmm. After a big 21, we had our midterm bottom. Remember, we called that October 22 low as well.
Yep.
And so that set up the 2023 pre-election year pattern. We had the, you know, Yale's line was, you know, midterm years are a bottom picker's paradise. We had the October bottom in a midterm year. I mean, it's like, tee it up for me. This cycle, you know, has been a textbook. So I'll tell you that it's not always this way. It's not always going to be this way. But right now, this whole four-year cycle going to 24 is still tracking. And as I mentioned, we hit that sweet spot of the four-year cycle, the Q4 midterm year to Q2 of the pre-election year. We had that weakness that we tracked and were all over last year. Another October bottom, a late October bottom or low or whatever you want to call it. And then that Q4 high. So here we are entering with the four-year cycle continuing to track, including that chart that you're showing there with the different election year you know patterns, and you know unless something changes, I mean, Matt, everyone's looking for this recession. I don't know what's going on with the leading economic indicators and the yield curve inversions. Now that it's going to revert, it's going to go. The market's going to sell off. Everyone's worried about sentiment right now. I mean, I looked at the Investors Intelligence. I know you look at other sentiment indicators. If you go back to 21, not so long ago, we were up at these bullish extremes for the whole year, and the market just plowed right through it.
Yeah.
So, you know, bullish sentiment, if it's not at serious extremes, can stay that way and continue to be bullish. And with the sentiment indicators, just to shoot off on the side of that, you know, they really only work great at lows when there's a whole bunch of bears and not a lot of bulls. They're not really great at calling tops. They're much better put call, whatever, AAII, whatever you want to use. It's better at the bottom. So here we are, new all-time highs. Yeah, the breadth is something, leaves something to be desired. That can catch up. The small caps are wavering a little bit. NASDAQ's not quite hitting a new high, but, you know, Papa Dow and the S&P, you know, are leading. Maybe we'll get some more rotation. But also, if you look at this chart that we still have up there, thank you for keeping that there. You know, February is the weak, the weak link in the best 6 months.
Yeah.
And we also see some you know, Ides of March low periods. You can sort of zoom in on that there, which is typical of, you know, a lot of years, but also election years here. So we had a good January. We had a great fourth quarter. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a little backing and filling here through February and into March. Probably give people a good opportunity to adjust portfolios and do some more buying. So that's kind of the background of history. And, you know, the Fed today also saying we're not cutting so fast.
Mm-hmm. So potentially a pullback over the next couple of months, that would give enough time for a lot of these tech stocks that have shot out and have done really well over the last few months to set up bases. And then really it's more where we have a lot, where the markets work a lot better after the election, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay. We're expecting some weakness in Q2, Q3 as well, the typical worst 6 months period. But, you know, the end of election years, again, you can see it right there in the chart. You got after the election, September, November, December, bullish. You know, it's next year's another story. Well, I don't want to spoil a party, but we might get some return to some bearishness in the next 2 years, 25, 26. But for now, the bulls are on, you know, are in charge, and I think they're going to stay that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe to also talk about another thing that shows up on this chart. And again, just for people that are listening, you know, we've got four lines here. You know, we've got the red line, which is when there's an open field for the presidency. And, you know, that's kind of a little bit choppy, you know, back and forth. And that's the lower line. You've got two lines in the middle, kind of your STA aggregate cycle and your all election years. And those are kind of in the middle. Those trace pretty close together. And then you have what we have right now, the sitting president running. And that's a green line that is pretty nicely in a, you know, upward trajectory to the, you know, up and to the right.
Still shows that mid-February, you know, peak and the selling right into yep. mid-March.
And even, you know, in this chart, it looks like it kind of comes back strong and like over the summer, which is usually something you would expect to be a little seasonally weak, but the summertime looks pretty good leading up into the election. And then it really kind of, you know, hits the gas at the end of the election or after the election.
That's the last 7 months pattern there.
Yeah. So really, you know, really interesting stuff. Now we kind of touched on it a little bit, but this whole part of the Fed, and again, we've had some things that are, you know, very, very interesting. I mean, we had such an incredible Fed hike cycle, you know, and now there's the expectation for a major cutting cycle, which again, we'll see if that comes to play out or not. Is any of that kind of data also overlaid in here?
It's not really overlaid in there, but you know, that's where we don't just look at seasonality, where we look at fundamentals, technicals, monetary and government policy and sentiment, like we mentioned. So that's the other stuff that you look at. I don't suspect a major cutting cycle. Mm-hmm. I think couple, two, three, starting around mid-year. But you know, the Fed today just said it, they're in no rush. Mm-hmm. They seem to they got a, you know, big win here, a big feather in their cap. And all the historical stuff that people are looking at with Fed cutting cycles and interest rate curves, it's a new world. The Fed isn't the Fed that it used to be. Back in March 23, when you know the whole inversion thing started getting talked about, we went back and looked at the 81 minutes when Powell was in there, and they talked about following the bond market, and they had this window that if the bond market moves out of this range of 15% to 21%, that spread is larger than the actual Fed funds rate number right now. So some of this history stuff, with the Fed is not necessarily relevant, because things are it's not this time is different. It's that it's a different Fed. They are leading the bond market. They're not following it. And we've seen other seasonal patterns and things change. I've relegated things to the indicator graveyard over the years with Yale. Things just stop working, and why, The monthly the monthly cash flows pattern changed. They had that spike mid month because of the 401ks and the payroll deductions going into the market. So things do change, and I don't know if the market is really driven so much right now by the Fed, because it's only 5%, 5.25%. It's stable. It's steady, and I think it's all baked into the market because everyone's talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I'm not as concerned about the Fed. I don't think they're in a big rush to do any cutting. I think it just stays here, which is just fine for the market.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to get a little bit more into some of these indicators, the indicator graveyard, and what we should really be paying attention to as we go forward. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Money Briefing will explore what you need to know to become a homeowner and how to sustain your home by learning ways to manage the costs from unexpected expenses.
You're basically always in a state of checking. You're always keeping your eye open for anything that could be going wrong with your house. Your house is a complicated machine. It has a lot of systems and components in it, and those systems and components are getting older. They're wearing out.
You can get early access to our series, Buying a Home and Keeping It, on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, your host, along with Arusha Pieris, who joins me every week. He's a portfolio manager over at O'Neill Global Advisors. And our special guest this week is Jeffrey Hirsch. He's the editor of the Stock Traders Almanac, and something that was started by his father, Yale Hirsch. One of those things that most traders have their hands on, readily by their nightstands, their bedside table, certainly by their computers. But you were talking about kind of this indicator graveyard and how some indicators kind of go in favor and out of favor. And one of the indicators, I guess, that has gotten a little bit more attention than normal, I think, in the last year or so, has been the advanced decline line, as a measure of breadth, because we really have seen the indexes get very top heavy. And a lot of the strength that we saw in 2023 was, certainly at the beginning, especially, was regulated to such a few names. How is any of that playing into your kind of analysis here?
Well, I mean, it reminds me of the old days, the Nifty 50. There's been, amongst other peers, there's usually a handful or a couple of handfuls of leading stocks that are driving the market and ingenuity and global economy. It's getting a little long in the tooth or overbought, and I think we're seeing some of that today with some of the numbers that came out. I guess it was Alphabet and Microsoft that were they didn't disappoint, but I guess they didn't blow out the expectations, so that they came back, sold off a bit. I'd like to see some more breath. That's, one of the things we talk about in our pulse of the market, which comes right out of the record keeping, forms in the back of the almanac. We definitely want some more broader base support, new highs, new lows, and we go in the wrong direction. But, it's not, frightening yet. It's just, it would be more encouraging and more supportive to see some rotation into the other stocks. And I suspect we'll get some of that. Everyone's talking about it right now, but it's on our radar. It's a concern. But leading stocks are going to lead, and we're seeing that.
So what about like the small caps, Jeff, where they've started to act a little bit better now? They have pulled back. I'll pull up the IWM right here. But
yeah.
Right. So that it and on IWM, the key resistance, I'll switch over to the weekly chart here. The key resistance was around 200. It broke out of that, pulling back in a pretty constructive manner here. What do you think about the action so far for the small caps this year and really at the end of last year?
Well, end of last year was impressive. I full disclosure, I own IWM. I own it back when we got our MACD buy signal for the best months in mid-October. So I'm happy with that trade right now. We compare it to the the 2000 to the 1000 for seeing how small caps are doing versus the rest of the market. Mm-hmm. There's a something called the January effect, not to be confused with the January barometer. Way back, I saw somebody quoted the guy who started it, Sidney Wachtel, an old analyst investment banker back in the 40s, discovered that small caps outperformed large caps in January. In the Almanac, we've documented for years that that takes place mostly at the last 2 weeks of December. We've seen that. I know you've seen the chart where we sort of split the year differently. We have, starting in July, going through June. So you can see that low point in October, November, and we hit that. It peaked a bit early this year. I'm looking at over my shoulder at my chart that I just updated of the Russell 2000 over the 1000. I don't know if you've got a seen that recently, but it's found some support, here in mid late January, and it versus the 1000, and it's starting to move up a little bit. I'm concerned. Admittedly, I'm not thrilled with the way the Russell and the small caps are behaving. They were great for a short period of time, but that may be over. It's not something I've got my IWM position. I got my eye on it. I don't want to give up any gains on that. So
making sure it doesn't step out of line, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess what are you looking for as kind of signals that things are playing out as expected? I mean, you already kind of laid out the expectations, but are there things that kind of act as a warning, like, if February and March are weak, but then they get weaker than expected. Are there things that you start saying, oh, wait a minute, now we're veering off of precedent, or we're veering off of where the odds are saying, and we might need to start changing our expectations?
We will. I mean, we're going to stick with our seasonal trade, most likely without a stop until we get into April, except for the Russells, because that's come back a bit. I think you hit on it there, Justin, with, if February, March are, unnaturally weak or irregularly weak, that would be concerning. I think the breadth numbers that we talked about, both the advanced decline and the new highs, new lows, the 10-year, if that gets, that's pulled back a bit. If you want to pull that up, it's come down there. And I track that on my chart with the S&P in the back, correlated to it. And if we get, a significant rise in the 10-year, that could put pressure on the market as well. But we'll also be tracking the election year seasonal pattern. If it veers off that too much, we'll reserve the right to make some adjustments. But with all of our stock picks and ETF picks, there are stops in there. And we, bring them up with, as the trail them higher as they go up. And that's what happened in 22. If you remember, we got stopped by the time the best 6 months was over. We got our sell signal. We were stopped out of most everything, mm-hmm. and in mostly cash in about April of 22. So, stick to the stops. And again, I don't put stops in the market. I don't want the market makers hitting that. It's an alert. It's a mental stop. And our philosophy is that if the stock or ETF or whatever closes below our stop level, then you sell it the next day. Mm-hmm. So, you got to keep an eye on that stuff. So 10-year, breadth, and some sort of breakdown of the market in general.
Anything about exogenous events? I mean, we've got you know, we've got a couple wars going on, you know, there's there's some stuff going on in the world. So
unfortunately there always is.
It's
definitely hotter right now. Two wars in play. It's a concern. There's also stuff Taiwan and North Korea and that sort of thing. So we're always concerned about that. It's definitely on the radar, but you can't predict the black swan event. But all we can do is track the cycles and the patterns and what the indicators technically and fundamentally are telling us. And if something should happen, if it's that bad, it doesn't matter what your position is, but most likely it's probably better to buy any major sell-off like we just witnessed with COVID a few years ago. I mean, March 16th to 20 whatever or April was a great time to buy. So, you know,
Cuban Missile Crisis, you know,
all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's a quote from Baron Rothschild, Nathan Rothschild, that, you got to be careful how you say it, but the time to buy stocks is when blood is running in the streets.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a hard truth.
Mm-hmm. So maybe talk a little bit more about earnings season on how you incorporate earnings season into your screens where you find new ideas.
We found that, you know, when we make our annual stock picks at the outset of the best 6 months, that we've done better waiting for the earnings to come in when we run our screens. It's no secret we use Market Smith as part of it. We do also use other screening products. I won't necessarily mention them here, but Market Smith is a big part of our analysis. And we want to be looking at stocks that are blowing out numbers, accelerating growth in revenue and earnings with good valuations, modest relative strength, not beating the market, not lagging the market, and underfollowed by Wall Street. It's not as much a momentum style as IBD and the O'Neill philosophy. I've joked with you before. I kind of refer to our system as pre-can slim.
Right.
Get in there a little bit ahead of time. But again, they don't all work. You got to sell the losers. The ones that go up, you let them ride, sell half on a double, perhaps put more in. But if stuff breaks down, okay, you got to cut the loss.
Yeah. The risk management is so important. With earnings, do you kind of compile like an overall tone of an earnings season? Are there more surprises? How does it affect the trend of maybe GDP numbers? I mean, certainly that's one of the things a lot of people have been wondering about, this whole soft landing as a recession, especially with the yield curve, as you mentioned, having been inverted for so long. Any of those kind of, culminations of data together, does that kind of look anything to you right now?
I'm looking for earnings, in stocks that are significant, that are just, off the charts. These earnings that we're seeing coming out now, whether they're in the Magnificent Seven, other things, it's maybe a little sell on the news. Maybe people are expecting more blowouts. It's all part of it. But for us, when we do our screens, I'm looking at earnings, in a relative basis. Like, I'm looking for stocks that are doing better than the market. We might use the S&P as the benchmark, their PE ratio or their earnings numbers. Shout out to Sam Stovall, good friend who gives us, some nice work from CFRA. I know competitor, but real good guy, and their earnings analysis on the broad market and the S&P is something that we'll refer to and rely on. But the GDP numbers, we get from Atlanta Fed is quite accurate. So I'm not expecting earnings to be so negative this year, and it looks like there's mixed numbers. We're probably going to see some rotation into other sectors. We'll see what goes on with energy, something we're looking at right now that's seasonally set up as well as in the news
mm-hmm.
with what's going on with one of those wars.
And then also is, you know, kind of getting back to the election part. At the end of the day, does it matter as much political party that's in power? If there's a change, you know, does any of that kind of factor in? Or is it really about, you know, you got the sitting president and, you know, if they remain in office, does that have a difference or any of that play into it?
It does. I mean, party, you know, changeover is important. Presidential party, less important than congressional party. We've got a split Congress right now. Republican Congresses have been better for the market, but the combination of Democratic presidents has been the biggest, you know, market gains. What you see when you have, you know, say an unpopular president ousted is something I joke, I call the ding dong, the witch's dead effect, where you get a bounce after that unpopular president is ousted. And you'll see weaker markets throughout the year if you know, it's likely that the incumbent or even the incumbent party is out. So less important for the actual party of the president than the continuation of the same party. And I mean, Congress is meshuga, I think would be the word.
Can we quote you on that? Sure. Yeah. And you know, this is something that we talked about a few weeks ago, but anything about the Super Bowl? any projections there?
The AFC, Super Bowl? NFC? I was hoping for the Ravens and the Lions, but for some reason I think the fix is in somehow. I don't know. It's just I don't have a prediction. I'd like to see somebody other than the Chiefs win. Even though when Mahomes was a rookie in my fantasy league, I robo picked him and won the league that year. So, you know, he's all right.
I got to say, Arusha was on top of that in our fantasy league. He was an early, you know, early believer in the Mahomes IPO, I think so. Very good. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the stocks that are coming up on Jeffrey's screens and maybe some of the ETFs and areas of interest. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, along with Arusha Paris, who joins me every week. He's from the O'Neill Global Advisors, and he's also a portfolio manager over there and analyst. And of course, we have as our special guest returning to the show, Jeffrey Hirsch. He is the editor of the Stock Trader's Almanac, and we're going to talk a little bit about stocks. You kind of teased this in the last segment that you were looking at potential seasonality with XLE, which is the energy sector spider ETF. What is it about XLE that you think is looking interesting? And again, we already talked about some exogenous factors out there, especially with what's going on in the Middle East and, you know, Red Sea. How does all that kind of play in?
The EV batteries not working in frigid temperatures up in Buffalo and the northern
Chicago
parts
of and
Chicago. But there was a big, you know, talk about it at the I guess one of the playoff games a few weeks ago. But you know, last I checked, we're not running out of demand for oil and gas. And then if you turn to page 92, 4, and 6 of the Stock Trader's Almanac, you will see the seasonal patterns for the stock sectors and the old XOI, which the XLE tracks pretty closely, is the oil, you know, stock, the oil company index, tends to make a low in December. Earlier last month in our, you know, ETF portfolio issue, we put out a buy on XLE, a little bit lower than it is today, but it's still, you know, somewhat attractive. We have it on hold right now, but with what it's pulling back a little bit, what we see here is a combination of, you know, a seasonal setup that's tracking closely. I see that chart there of XLE setting up a base for me. I don't see an O'Neill pattern clicking
this
in.
Kind
right
of
there.
Large trading range, yeah.
Large trading range.
Very large trading range.
Yeah. And then there's
Right there around its 200-day moving average line, just underneath it.
What's that? What's that other bottom that you're seeing there, way back? What year, is that? Last year?
76. Yeah, this is like back in the summer and spring.
What's the one? Is that December 22?
This is looks like July of 22. Yeah.
No, 65. But right here in the middle of the chart, is that December? The low, right near that dotted line. Yeah, right there, right up.
Right there. Oh, this is March of 2023.
March of 23. I was just wondering. So, anyway, technically, it seems to be setting up. Macroeconomic or the macro picture, as I mentioned, oil is still, pretty in demand. It had come down a bit. And then we've got some of the geopolitics that are, putting a bit in underneath there. So it sets up well for us. And, it's something that is going to be being used for a long time. I don't see any end for, to the energy companies, the oil and gas, mega caps.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned gas, and we should probably look at natural gas. We often look at UNG as kind of a representation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, you look at the weekly chart on this, and of course, remember, Ukraine, when that invasion happened, the expectation was, oh, natural gas is really going to skyrocket. The supply is just going to get really disrupted. And it wasn't too long after that it just really came crashing down. So what
was good? It was good for the energy bills for the air conditioning season last summer.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was also one of those things where, remember everyone was concerned about when winter hit, with that Ukraine invasion. And it just so happened it was a warmer winter because Europe was, was kind of wondering, okay, what are we going to do here? But man, the price just really, I don't think if you had given me the headline, I would have expected this, right?
There was that pipeline fiasco.
That's right.
Yeah. Explosion mm-hmm. thing that was a little conspiracy theory going on there too. Mm-hmm. But we had a big pop in gas right at the end of the year, kind of ran along with the NASDAQ or the Russell 2000 run up. But here we are getting back down to that level. And the reason why I mentioned gas during the break was that its seasonal low for the natural gas usually happens around February. We see a bottoming process seasonally with oil and gas, the stocks, the producers, as well as the commodities in the December to February timeframe. So this is setting up for us. We're going to be looking at it over the next couple of days and seeing if it's a good set up and buy point for us to get into the gas natural gas ETFs and or some stocks.
Individual stocks, right.
There's the FCX, I think, is I know it's a little bit of a curveball. It's FCX is the natural gas producers, I believe, if memory serves. That
FCX is the Freeport. That's
Freeport.
Copper. Yeah, that's copper.
Maybe it's FCG or something like that. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, it's an actual gas ETF.
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. Okay. Whew. so that's another one that is tradable for this seasonal pattern. But we haven't made a decision on it just yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Turning our attention to some other stocks. This is one that actually not on my radar at all. But you brought up VIRC. Talk a little bit about what this what got this on your radar.
Well,
for manufacturing.
I will first off admit that when we pick these stocks, we don't claim to know why or what's going on there. We run a fundamental screen, and then we do a technical overlay. We roll them into Market Smith, and we look for patterns as well as outperformance in the quarterly numbers, the annual numbers. We're looking for accelerating growth in revenue earnings sequentially year over year. We're looking for good PEs and price to sales, low debt, and stuff that's under the radar. We want some strength but not too much. And this is a, you know, movable furniture and equipment manufacturer for schools and hospitality is the business description. We may have pulled that right off of Market Smith. Is that, if that's what it
yeah.
says right
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
Told you we use it. But the PE was low. They were outperforming, business, you know, 10K, 10 QIs with their earnings reports. And it's just the kind of stock that sleeping below, you know, the key here is the seasonal time. We put this recommendation out November 9th with a basket of other stocks. And it's the beginning of the best 6 months. We got a heck of a run at the Q4, especially in small caps. This is in our small cap list, mm-hmm. under a billion in market cap at the time. Is it up over a billion yet? Maybe
no, it's, no, it's like 200 million. 200 million.
Yeah. So. Yeah, still way down there, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was 110 when we put it out. And then we want stocks that don't have a lot of analysts following it. So okay. that means that whatever we're seeing might get picked up by other people as it starts to gain some traction and rise up. So that's how this gets through our screen. And mm-hmm. it's one of our big winners, you know, this for this basket.
You mm-hmm. you know, it's interesting, Jeff. I was just talking with a fund manager and they brought this name up. They're looking for, like, you know, microcaps and things like that, but they brought this name up of one of the stocks that they like, and I had never heard that. The only reason I've heard about it was because he showed it to me yesterday. But that's interesting.
What
I
mean, do you
that,
mean?
That's
you,
a great screen.
Well, besides
your thing, but yeah, it was. I mean, it's been an amazing run.
Sounds like this manager was looking for a little momentum too to get noticed. I'm not a momentum guy. I want, you know, my father raised me as a ground floor stock picker. You know, we look for the first thing he taught me was price to sales ratio less than one. You know, you can't get that. And this one had a price to sales ratio less than one when we picked it, which mm-hmm. is very hard to come by these days. Mm-hmm. That's the one metric that it's hardest to manipulate with the financials, because it's just top line growth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you mentioned how you kind of dig a little bit into the 10Q, 10K numbers. Are there other, you know, factors of the business itself that you get into, or is it really just come down to the numbers?
Nothing with the story. It's just numbers. It's just debt, margins, cash flow, earnings, revenues, growth, you know, and how many people are following it?
Well, yeah, Jeff, well, let's get into the third stock. And this was one of your calls from last year. And it's definitely been one of the hottest stocks in the market this year, Supermicrocomputer, SMCI.
Insane. Yeah. I mean, actually, we picked that in 22, November 22 at about 81.93 was our recommendation price. Yeah,
November, I think we might have done a victory lap last year for SMCI, and we're doing another one this year.
I mean, they're winning again. I mean, it keeps it's up like 547% since we recommended it. It's not even, I haven't even updated that in the newsletter portfolio, because it's up substantially since it's up like $200 since in the past 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
the last update, it was at 342. Now it's at 532 or something last we looked. So they're winning the you know, AI equipment game. And again, this was the same criteria that we used to pick VIRC. It's a, you know, proven strategy. You know, they don't all become 10 baggers, but right. You know, you get rid of a couple that are down, you know, 10, 5, 20%, and you get a bunch that are up, you know, a couple hundred that double or more, that's the name of the game. So I just, it's amazing to me how vertical it's become again on the chart. So I don't know, you look at this. I mean, at one point, I'm not sure if it still is, last year it became the biggest stock in the Russell 2000.
It still is. Yeah. Yeah. By far. Right. It's I think everything else is like 8 billion. And here's we were wondering about it last year when it was like 21 billion. Now it's 20, it's almost 30 billion. So I'm sure, and they only rebalance once a year. So I'm sure it'll be removed in June. But it is kind of funny.
It's going to go where in June?
It'll probably go to the mid cap, I'm guessing. But right. So it is, it's pretty interesting at how this, it clearly sticks out versus all the other ones.
What is this on your radar?
Yeah. I mean, this has been one of the stocks that has consistently come up on the screens over the years, because it's one of the, in addition to an Nvidia, it's one of those almost pure play AI plays, right? So, I don't think anyone could have imagined that it was going to go up another 200. But you know, once they came out and a couple of weeks ago, they came out and pre-announced and raised their guidance, and then they just came out with earnings a few days ago, and then they gave a little bit more information, and the stock just keeps going up.
Would you chase it here?
No, it is definitely extended at this point. Much like the last time when it was running, and we were probably talking about on one of the other episodes you were on, Jeff, it was really extended at one point. Then it took like 6 months off, right? And it slowly set up. It really settled down, and then it broke out over the last month or so. So you have to still be disciplined, but you need to wait for something else to set up.
So seasonality, fundamentals, technicals, portfolio management. That's the name of the game. It's not simple, but it's not easy, but it's simple.
Yeah,
it's true.
Well, and again, sometimes it's hard not to get in, involved too much on the emotional side. And that's what, you know, we really like about your approach. It's so data reliant. And again, takes a lot of those emotions out of it. So, Jeff, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for coming on. Great stuff. And just as a reminder, folks can go to Stock Traders Almanac and if they haven't gotten it already, you've already come out with the 2024 edition. And when they kind of get it from you, they also get access to a lot of great stuff on your website, a lot of great analysis. So anything else I should add to that?
I don't know. Click Get STA when you go to StockTradersAlmanac.com and you'll get a discount.
Yeah. And Jeff has on the site, it has a lot of such great content that I don't think everyone knows. But there's some amazing bundles that you always give too. So not only you get it for a year or 2 years, but then you'll the deals on the actual book. So definitely check it out. If you weren't convinced by seasonality and what the great value Stock Trader Almanac was giving you before, 2023 should be, you know, a clear no brainer there. Or in all the episodes that we, and there's a reason we have.
I was just going to say, the year. Go to some of the archived episodes and take a look at what, you know, Jeff did, and, you know, just note the date, you know, that, you know, we had the episode, and, you know, a lot of stuff really, really came to pass. So, of course, you know, you had the odds on your side now, because again, you were looking at the data, and there's always those chances of things not going exactly as we expect, but it really kind of does give you a nice guide to go off of. So we really appreciate you sharing your data and your knowledge with us, Jeff. Great to have you on.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks again.
Okay. That's going to wrap it up for us on this show. And don't forget to tune in next week. We're going to have a Dr. Thomas Carr back on the show. He's also known as Dr. Stocks. So it'll be a pleasure to chat with him and get his take on things. So we hope you join us for that. Thanks a lot for watching this time around. We'll see you next time.
Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.